It is Monday the 5th of September, and this is episode 94, take 2, of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome along to another episode. Yes, take 2 because it didn't work the first time we tried, unfortunately, and we're on our second go, so forgive us if we sound a bit tired. I'm joined today by Ian.
Hello again.
Even though they never will hear that first episode.
But the only thing I'll point out, there has been 3 days since we last recorded that.
Yeah, but it's...
Three days.
Yeah, so we're even late on delivery as well. Slickest podcast around, I think, aren't we?
The worst thing is, I think Fridays really flowed well. And see, we've had this once before, back in the day when Shaq was with us. Which, he's not dead. I just as soon as I said that, I thought, that's a bit kind of terminal. But when Shaq was in the podcast with us, we had one night where we had to just do it again because recording at my end had failed miserably at all. I was like a instead of anything legible.
Well,
but I won't mention the fact that your Windows
My name's Chris, and I'm a PC, and I like crashing. How many times was it for? Anyway,
5.
I'm running on my Mac at the moment. Is it? Yeah, 5 times. Ian says. So some news. I guess we're not really up to date with this. It happened a while ago, but and I'm sure you've all heard. But yes, Mr. Jobs or some such person has resigned from Apple, which is quite sad. He wrote a letter to. I think it was the board saying, you know, when the day came that he couldn't do his role, he couldn't do his job anymore, he would step down, and he said that day has come, which is all a bit sad. Sad for Apple fans especially, and there's obviously a lot of querying where Apple are going to go from here without their main man. But another, I guess, one of the original crew of computer geeky people is gone.
Yes. So there was, I mean, for me, it's like how Bill Gates, Larry Ellison, that you know, Steve Wozniak, there's those kind of names that mean something in industry. You know, and I think they're almost revered. You know, they're just, you know, they're kind of like the old guys.
Yeah, I mean, and we've all grown up with them. I mean, in fact, the computer industry's grown up with them. That's more the point, isn't it? It's
absolutely.
They created the industry that we kind of live and work within now.
Yes, and the bit that's quite sad is whether you like Apple or not, and whether you think Apple have changed things or not. It's the fact that it's, you know, somebody who is obviously his health has let them down. You know, it's not an age thing. He's not returning to do other things. It's he's doing something he loves, and he's had to give it up.
I think it's important to say that he hasn't actually said full. You know, he's still the chairman of the board.
He is chairman of the board.
So he's not out of the loop by any means. In fact, I'm sure he'll still, you know, be an influential character. But he's not going to take that kind of... Well, you imagine that he's not going to have that micromanagement role that he's had up until now.
No.
And how...
No.
I mean, personally, I think that's been quite influential in why they are so successful, because they've got one man and one man's vision driving a whole company.
Absolutely. And I think you can see that from the products. You know, like you can see there's a kind of single drive. And I mean, you said that a few podcasts ago, they need to get away from this thing about Apple being a small company. You know, they have got 30,000-40,000 engineers, but you can see there's almost like a single purpose about them. Whereas other companies have got a much more splattergun approach to rolling out their tech and rolling out their products. They are, you know, there's a focus.
I mean,
that Apple have.
The scattergun effect is not, you know, without its merits, but it comes
I don't see that as a bad thing, but it's not something Apple do.
No, they don't do it at the moment.
They're very focused.
I think one thing for me is they're, for so long, they've obviously, you know, in their successful era, shall we say, they've had this guy shivving them along and telling them what they should think almost. And they've created this whole company around how he likes to do things and how this, you know, basically this micromanagement, you know, control down to the nth degree, the control the user experience, the user's a king, and all those kind of things. Now, I don't have any worry that the next 5 years, Apple are going to be able to do that same thing. They're going to be able to, you know, put out some new products. I'm sure the products are already in the, you know, the production lines of starting to, you know, the thought processes and things. What worries me more is that after that 5 years period, when something comes along that they haven't seen or aren't at the forefront of, you need someone with drive and vision to be able to change what Apple is. So at the moment, Apple is this, you know, integrated approach, but maybe in, you know, 5 years time is going to be more about open standards and you know, integrating, you know, and mashups between all these open standards. And will someone have the vision to be able to you know, change their direction, move it away from what Steve Jobs has created into something else so it can live on?
Yes, and we won't know until it happens. I can see them struggling to do that. There's not many companies where, you know, if you look at when Jobs came back to Apple and the kind of dire straits were in, how they took the Macs forward. And although it was still a niche product, they're obviously very profitable, and then brought out things like the iPod, and then the iPhone, and then the iPad. And if you look at the money they're making off the iPad, I mean, there was some maths behind it. If you look at how much money they'll probably make off smart covers, from the iPad 2s, is probably more than anybody else will make from their own tablets. And that turns out to be true. And it's scary to think that, you know, a bit of plastic or a bit of leather on top of an iPad is making more money than anybody else is in the tablet industry.
I think I don't know if these figures are absolutely 100% accurate, but it's something like Apple have sold about 20 million iPad 2s. Or it could, I mean, this is all a bit sketchy, sorry about that, but it's something in the region that they've sold 20 million iPads. Now, the next biggest one, I think at the moment, is the HP Touchpad, which we'll come on to in a minute, who have sold roughly 2 million units. So there's a factor of 10 difference.
And even the 2 million, I mean, they've had to sell them at a fair old loss to actually punt that many units.
Not a fair old loss, a devastating loss, I think is probably fairer.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a whole lot of rumours at the weekend that, you know, Samsung have put 1 million tablets out there, but they've only sold 20,000.
Yeah.
You know, so they've got all these units in retail right now.
Not helped
now,
by the fact they can't actually advertise it.
I think
so we might come on to that as well.
One of the things it's not that I didn't like, and we need to be careful, I mean Steve Jobs hasn't died here, and then a lot of the stories where there was an edge to them of, like, you know, it's a passing of a great man kind of thing, you know. And I think, and it's hard to avoid.
It's because there's very little. Okay, there's very little difference for one between someone leaving and someone passing away, in many respects.
Bye, Shaq.
It's an easy mistake to make, but there is obviously the added element of the fact that this is likely to be down to health reasons.
And I think, I mean, we both read this story, I think, at different times, but we've kind of picked this out as kind of almost like the best story. So this was from Vic Condotra, who is a senior vice president of engineering at Google, one of the driving forces behind Google Plus now. And he posted this up in Google Plus, I think it was the day after or within a few hours of the Jobs announcement coming out. And I'll just read it out because I think it's a great story. So one Sunday morning, January 6, 2008, I was attending religious services when my cell phone vibrated. As discreetly as possible, I checked the phone and noticed that my phone said caller ID unknown. I chose to ignore. After services, as I walked to my car with my family, I checked my cell phone messages. The message left from Steve Jobs. "Vic, can you call me at home? I have something urgent to discuss," it said. Before I even reached my car, I called Steve Jobs back. I was responsible for all mobile applications at Google, and in that role, had regular dealings with Steve. It was one of the perks of the job. And even just reading that sentence, it was one of the perks of the job. It was like, is he having a pop? And I guess we're both smiling right now because it's like, I'm sure it is a perk when Steve Jobs phones you and says, "Vic, this isn't working."
I'm sure it happens a fair bit, yes.
Yes. So, "Hey Steve, this is Vic," I said. "I'm sorry I didn't answer your call earlier. I was in religious services and the caller ID said unknown, so I didn't pick up." Steve laughed. He says, "Vic, unless the caller ID said God, you should never pick up during services." I laughed nervously. After all, well, it was customary for Steve to call during the week upset about something. It was unusual for him to call me on a Sunday and ask me to come to his hall. Ask me to call his home. I wondered what was so important. "So, Vic, we have an urgent issue, one that I need addressed right away. I've already assigned someone from my team to help you, and I hope you can fix this tomorrow, said Steve. I don't know about you, but see if my uber boss was calling me and told me I want this, you know, want this fixed tomorrow, I'd be sweating.
Yeah, too, right?
So I would be thinking it's something major. You know, I'd be thinking like there's a server broke, there's an application broke, something critical.
Yeah, so the e-commerce site's gone down.
Yeah. So, Steve, I've been looking at the Google logo on the iPhone, and I'm not happy with the icon. The second O in Google doesn't have the right yellow gradient. It's just wrong. I'm going to have Greg fix it tomorrow. Is that okay with you? Of course this was okay with me. A few minutes later on that Sunday, I received an email from Steve with the subject Icon Ambulance. The email directed me to work with Greg Christie to fix the icon. Since I was 11 years old and fell in love with an Apple II, I have dozens of stories to tell about Apple products. They've been a part of my life for decades. Even when I worked for 15 years for Bill Gates at Microsoft, I had a huge admiration for Steve and what Apple produced. But in the end, when I think about leadership, passion, and attention to detail, I think back to that call I received from Steve Jobs on a Sunday morning in January. It was a lesson I'll never forget. CEOs should care about details, even shades of yellow on a Sunday. To one of the greatest leaders I've ever met, my prayers and hopes are with you, Steve. I don't know, just sums up a whole load of things about Steve Jobs for me.
Certainly, it sums up what our impression of Steve Jobs is, and clearly the people that work with him and work closely with him, same thing, you know?
Absolutely.
You know, what we know of him from what we hear about the stories is there's at least an element of truth in them.
I posted another one. I put the link in it. It's the fourth link in the story. It was from a chap called Alan Paltrow as well. And he was just a kid that had an Apple logo shaved into his head. And it's obviously from a few years ago. But it was like, it was how he was picked out at an event. They got him to an opening of a store. Steve was there. There was another kid who says, I'm the biggest Apple fan. And Steve was like, what about that guy over there? And was pointing him out. And it's just great. You know, it's like this guy's in charge of Apple. And he still seems to have a human touch about him. And I think I always felt that about Bill Gates as well. There was something different about him. He wasn't just a run-of-the-mill boss. He wasn't, you know, yes, they're obviously concerned about facts and figures, but there was just something more.
Yeah, because we had an email from Andrew Bullock, who wrote in, and here's a paragraph from that email. I think it's quite poignant, which is says, sure, Apple will survive just as Microsoft has survived post-Gates, sort of, and other companies have prevailed, but those early visionaries are slowly being replaced one by one, and not by engineering wizards or design gurus, but essentially by suits or accountants, guys who can generate margin through financially efficient means rather than innovation. And for my money, the IT industry is a little poorer without these kind of characters at the top. And I would concur with that. So what of the person who's taking over then? So he's going to be replaced by a guy called Tim Cook, who we don't know much about him yet. He has been the CEO. Sorry, was it the acting COO or something like that?
He's been acting CEO certainly for most of this year, and when he had his previous absence, he was acting CEO as well.
I think it's fair to say that this guy has been running Apple for longer than we give him credit for, purely because I think Steve Jobs' absences have been actually more frequent than we would know, purely because I think every time they say Steve Jobs is away on illness or whatever, they wipe billions off of their value, and that's no...
And the bit I didn't like was the amount of people reporting was, you know, how it was gay. And this was, you know, now there was a gain to us, one of the biggest tech companies in the world. And I was like, I don't care. And some people pointed out, maybe it was a good thing to point this out, you know, that somebody who maybe other people think was maybe disadvantaged by, you know, outing himself or whatever. And I was like, yeah, but I don't care. The same way I wouldn't care if he's Jewish or Indian or Sikh or Catholic Protestant, which is a, you know, a bit of an issue sometimes around here. But I just don't care about these things. I care if he does a job well. You know, that's all that should matter.
100%. It comes both, you know, both ways. It's a good thing that he's in this position. But you know, whether it is a big deal to some people, I'm sure it is in the world, unfortunately. So basically, this guy's going to take over, and so I think we've laid our cards on the table as fair as I personally think they're going to be fine for about 5 years, and I'm just not sure beyond that. And I guess we'll. Who is going to be sure beyond that?
And all you need to do is look at the rumours. You know, iPhone 5, the next, I don't know, 4 to 6 weeks seems to be everybody's bet. iPad 3 early next year. There's a whole load of rumours this weekend about Apple TV again, an actual proper, you know, rival Sony and Samsung with a TV, which has been talked about so much. I mean, it's now taking on proportions similar to the iPad. The iPad was always talked about for years. The iPhone was talked about for years, and it, you know, every event came up and they never showed it. There must be something in the background to be driving this. This isn't just, you know, people putting two and two together and making five. There'll be probably demo units. There'll be whisperings within the industry. And it's I don't know. I think that'll be when we see a difference. You know, the iPad's a market now they've established, and they'll do the usual Apple and iterate. You know, it'll get slightly thinner. There'll be some, you know, tweak or some new feature, or it'll be faster, or there'll be some crazy 3D version, some point, but there'll be small tweaks.
As much as we bemoan Apple for doing that as well, you know, the fact that they don't do anything revolutionary, it's usually in steps. They've got no reason to do anything in big steps because they're just wasting profit margin for the future. You know, there's no point in them doing everything in one device because then they've got nothing for you to want in the next one, basically. You know, there we go. So that's the big Apple news that's not new news anymore. But there you go. That's our take on it. We've had some Facebook privacy changes. Now, as far as privacy changes go on Facebook, these are actually quite positive. essentially, they've added an extra drop down to each of your posts that you make, which enables you to say who you want to share that post with. In a very similar way to, you know, you can share a Google Plus with their circles. This one, you can choose what level of publicity you want to make for your post. So whether you want to make it completely public, whether you want to share it just with your friends, or I guess you can have a custom level as well, friends of friends and things like that. So a positive move. And I think it just shows how you put a bit of competition back in the market, and even Facebook has to respond, basically.
Yeah, this is to me a direct response to Google Plus. They said it's not, and it's been in the background for months and months. But the similarities are you know, pretty scary. And I mean, previously, if I posted something, it went to everyone, and everyone was never clear to a lot of people. Does that mean everyone that I friend? Is it everyone in the world? And it was everyone in the world. So they've now changed that to say it's public. You know, so it's a lot more clearer that it's not just your friends, it's not just the people you've friended, it's everybody will now see this post. And I think they've done good things like, you know, if you tagged me in a picture, I can now, you know, remove that.
Yeah, so now...
You know, and it gives you a bit more control.
Yes, and you have... So basically, they've actually removed the limitation of who you can tag. So you can tag anyone as anything in any photo. But essentially now you can set, as a user, you can set up a moderation queue effectively for anyone that's tagging you in photos. You can say, right, I want to moderate those before I let that tag out into the wild. And it's definitely something that's needed because there's plenty of photos which I go around taking tags back off.
I wonder why.
So positive
but
moves.
No, as you said, it's finally a positive move because so many Facebook posts are either new features or horrible steps that they're taking with
how many news stories have we reported on where we've gone, oh my goodness me, get out now.
So. I mean, I was going to mention the fact that they've increased the resolution of pictures now to 900 pixels wide. It's like, wow.
Mind you, Facebook altering to 900 pixels wide is probably the difference of another massive data center with petabytes worth of data stored somewhere.
Absolutely. Ridiculous. I mean, and that's the thing, it sounds so petty going from, I think it was from 700 to 900. And you're like, wow. But
it probably makes quite a percentage difference. Wise, that does make a difference.
Yeah.
Now, the stories that we're getting truly bored of right now are patent stories, however you want to say it.
Patent.
But it is getting rather ridiculous what's going on at the moment. And I think we're both bored of them, so we're probably not going to report too much more on them yet.
We should take an oath. We should take an oath to the listeners. We will not report on this.
It's not going to happen because something will happen big, and then we'll have to.
Yeah, right. Like Apple will get banned.
But essentially, they will sort themselves out eventually, won't they? Effectively, it's just like I say, lawyers earning money. But this is quite a fun one. In that, how Samsung are trying to defend themselves against the Galaxy Tab 10.1 being banned in Germany, I think, in Australia as well.
Yeah, so they've cited Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey as prior art against an iPad design patent.
And they showed the video, didn't they? Well, I think they showed the video.
Oh, yeah. In court, they showed it. And funnily enough, one of the guys at my work today says, I'm all for it, but I think they should have cited Star Trek instead.
Yeah, I've like, heard that before.
And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, get a grip.
No, but because Star Trek, they all carry iPads around.
Get a grip.
Yeah, so it's quite an interesting thing. But Apple, I think they've got even more injunctions against Samsung. Even since we wrote this, they've pretty... I mean, basically, IFA's going along at the moment, which is the biggest consumer tech show that we have in Europe. And there's, you know, millions of... Well, I say millions. There's thousands of product releases being announced. But Samsung...
A couple of hundred.
Samsung, yeah, yeah, okay. Millions. Samsung have been pretty much crippled in what they can show because Apple is... getting all these injunctions, so now it's not just the 10.1 that's being banned. They can't show the 7.1, but also Apple have
the 7.7.
Is it 7.7?
See, just when we're mentioning all these sizes, yeah. So they've got a 10.1, an 8.9, a 7.7,
and they've got the old Galaxy Tab and the new Galaxy Tab as well.
They've got the old and the new Galaxy Tab, and they've got their 4.5-inch phone, and I've now just showed off a 5.5.
Yes, it's like it just fits in the palm, but it covers the whole hand. Yeah. It does look good, though.
See when we talked about... No, but see when we said Apple has a bit more focus.
Yeah.
And some people have a...
Focus and scatter gun. Yeah, like, yeah.
I think I can make 10 different sizes of tablet, which we'll go for all of them.
So anyway, in the latest dickish move by Apple, they have... they've got an injunction against the sale and distribution of Samsung phones in Holland. And that just happens to be the major European distribution center for Samsung. So effectively, Samsung now have to move their whole distribution center if they want to continue distributing to Europe. I mean, that's about the baked in to Android kind of patent disputes that are going on. So anyway, it's all going on. Apple are being dickish. Samsung can't show any products at IFA. I think
I felt so sorry for them. No, but I felt so sorry. You saw the pictures, and it was like, you know, this empty stand.
Yeah, because
of their products.
I mean,
crazy.
I mean, yeah, how annoying. I mean, I don't know what Samsung are going to do to revenge this, but I'm sure it's on their mind. I'm sure it is. Anyway, so that's that going on. Hooray! Government back down on social network shutdown.
Hooray! Or if I do more, I thought you just wanted me to say hooray. So there was after England rioted. I keep on emphasising England. I can't help it. It's just after so many people were saying to me, "Oh, typical day in Glasgow." Damn it! Yeah, and they're still saying it. It's just I think they know it's a weak sore point for me. But there was some crazy Tories saw this as a time to crack down, time to get out the Viva Vendetta masks, time to shut down all these social networks.
I think it's only fair to say it wasn't just Tories. It was pretty much, there was quite a public sentiment going on.
Yeah. Tories were basically wanting to shut... No, and you're right. There was a kind of knee-jerk... I mean, there's been a whole load of knee-jerk reactions to the writing. But one of them was that during certain times, the government should have the ability to shut down Facebook, Twitter, and BlackBerry messaging. You know, it's funny how those were the three that were mentioned. It wasn't just like, you know, anything else. It was those three. And Home Secretary was going to meet with the networks and was going to discuss this. Thankfully, they have met. Thankfully, within the first few minutes, it's been reported that was thrown out as unworkable and that the government didn't want to do that.
And it just completely disregards all the good things that have happened since we've had, you know, social networking and all the amazing measures.
Absolutely.
And you know, when Egypt was kicking off, you know, all the getting news out of Egypt was tough, you know, but they managed
I know this is totally pointless because I'm not going to get this podcast out to tomorrow night, but in BBC 2 tonight, I think at 9 o'clock, there's a part one of a two-part all about how Facebook and Twitter were used during Egypt. So
well, there's always iPlayer.
They've done it. There's always iPlayer. So according to the reviews, it's actually very good, seemingly.
So yeah, so don't forget the good thing. You can't have it both ways. You can't have the good stuff and the bad stuff. And I think, as everyone says, surely having that data on the networks that the police can, you know, look into and find more information out from is if that's what you want, you know, if you want to stop people, then that's a way of doing it. Because it, you know, I don't know, anyway.
No, and you're right. And what's come out of it is that the... What came out of it is that they can, you know, they're going to investigate ways how they can use social networks in a more positive way, how they can get their message over, how they can stop some of the, you know, maybe the misinformation that's going around, and how they can actually use it as a tool, not just use it as a, not just shut
like
it down.
Like Egyptian tanks in London.
Yes. And, the thing that's most, I mean, we're in a free society, and with free societies comes issues. You know, you can't control everybody, but I'd rather have the free society and have to control the minority that can potentially spoil it, rather than have it shut down for the majority. And that's the bit that has to come out.
I think I said at the time, I found it frightening how quickly we went from bemoaning the, you know, Egyptian government and the Saudi government from squashing people effectively and cutting off communication, things like that, to suddenly, you know, being draconian in what we were demanding as a society. I think we need to look at that quite carefully, but that's just my own worries.
I mean, we flipped, you know, within a couple of days, our country panicked.
Yeah, because I don't think, you know, mainly because we don't realize quite how close to anarchy we always are. Whoa. Okay. Google made some sort of announcement. I'm north somewhere. I don't know, in some lesser known place. I don't know.
So in Edinburgh, so it's the annual kind of media get together at the Edinburgh Festival.
Where normally BBC
and Herr Schmidt was over.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
And he said Google TV was coming to the UK within 6 months. This is the Google TV that failed in America within a couple of months, basically.
And don't worry, it's a priority for Google. So a year and a half after we've launched it, we're bringing it to the UK.
Yeah, because we're that important. But I think I think it could be quite interesting, because I think you'd agree that America works differently from the UK, and things work here that don't work over there, and vice versa. And perhaps having someone like as big as Google for us, you know, supplying this kind of service, it might actually make more sense in this smaller environment.
Well, I just wonder who the partner with Logitech and Sony, and they launched the devices with the kind of Google branding. So Google didn't launch a hardware themselves, and it failed for Logitech and it failed for Sony. I mean, Logitech lost a lot of money. Even with a fire sale, they still couldn't, you know, get rid of the...
And it's only fair to say that it's not because the service wasn't any good. It's because all the media providers and the content holders removed the ability for this TV to show the content because they weren't getting anything out of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they said it was okay for you to show something on a website, but it wasn't okay to show that same content on a TV.
Yes. And I guess the other issue we've got here is we don't have very many options for, you know, purchasing TV. You know, so we've got iPlayer, which is great. We've got ITV Player, Channel 4 and 5 have got their own options. Sky are doing their own thing round about, you know, Sky Go, which again, you have to subscribe to. But there's not, if I just wanted to go and rent, I mean, iTunes have dropped all its rentals. If I just want to go and, you know, buy or rent some TV, it's very hard to do. You know, a lot of people are watching box sets now rather than...
I'm a perfect example of that. I have, loads of box sets. I don't watch TV because of all the adverts getting in my way and are annoying. So I buy a box set and I can watch them at my own speed in my own, you know, my own little way. And I can watch more than one episode at once, and, you know, heck, if I want to, three. Gosh.
Wow.
So it's, and I think if I had the option to just watch the TV that I wanted to and pay just for that TV, I'd probably end up spending more money. Because I have Sky subscription, but I bemoan it. And I would prefer to spend that money on the things I want to spend on rather than most of the channels, which I have no interest in and don't watch it. There's no point in me having those channels, basically.
I think I would prefer to buy series. You know, so see if, you know, the latest Fringe is coming up in Sky. Let me watch it the day or 2 days after America, and I'll quite happily start to pay.
So the HBO model, basically, which is pay for your thing.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you could say, again, you get to the situation we get in music where you get less of that kind of discovery aspect because you're just going after the things you know you want. But I know that there are people out there who just do totally... They don't have a TV or a subscription anymore. They just get this stuff where they can online, and where they can't get it online, they go and pirate it, basically.
I discover more now from Twitter. Discover more from the kind of, you know, that kind of almost crowdsourcing, you know, what are the good things to be watching. I mean, The Killing, I totally missed The Killing.
So did
I. It was showing first time round. And the only time I spotted it was, I think it was about into the fourth or fourth or fifth week maybe BBC had been showing it, and because we were showing two episodes on a Saturday night, and I kind of thought, oh, that's rubbish. But then more and more people I knew started tweeting about it, and I thought, I've missed something big there. And I'll hold my hand. I downloaded it and I've been watching it, you know, downloaded rips from BBC.
Now, and I've been watching it on iPlayer because they've just started reshowing it again, but only just, you know, it was lucky that it all tied in with when I wanted to watch it. And how good is it? Yep. So if you're not watching The Killing, go. I mean, all the episodes are on iPlayer now, up to about episode 11, where they are in and they're playing it once a night, I think. There it is.
Yes. But the I've said it for years. I've always wanted it to be a change, and part of it is because I objected to paying that big lump sum disguise.
Yes, and
I'd rather, you know, I don't want 400 channels of guff. I'd be quite happy with 20 great channels. You know, and Sky Atlantic. I mean, I'm watching so much in that one channel now.
Yeah, well, I grab a whole ton of stuff of that. Said it all, but the thing is, I do said it all. I don't watch anything live. It's all on series record. And fast forward to the adverts, which I, again, shouldn't advertise too big because I'm sure we're going to have measures against that at some point soon.
So
I hate watching live TV because of the adverts.
Oh, adverts suck. But interesting to see, but from a Google TV perspective, who partners with them for hardware? And also, do they do something different? Is this going to be like a version 2 so you can have, you know, apps?
Yeah.
You know, so am I going to get Angry Birds on a small...
I wonder whether it's going to be a console-y type device or whether they're going to go for the integrate, you know, go for hardware manufacturers again. There's probably more. I think, again, there's just, Boxy never really got penetration on their box. I'm sure they've sold some, and I think it's a great service. But Google's a bigger name for us in the UK.
But you compare iPlayer running on Boxy to that new iPlayer version that's running on the PS3. It is great.
Yeah, I've not.
So BBC
I've not seen
it
yet.
They've reworked it really well and it works really well. You know, that is probably the best platform now for using iPlayer.
Yes, no, that was a yeah.
And one thing to add in, I've put the link in the show notes, and it's the only place it fitted in without it being a separate story. This is really, there's no tenuous link at all, but today's Google Doodle is and people are saying it's celebrating Freddie Mercury's birthday. It can't be his birthday because he's dead. But if he was alive, if he hadn't dabbled in the things he shouldn't have been dabbling in, he would have been 65 today. And a Google Doodle, I think, has been one of the best ones ever.
I haven't seen it yet. Okay.
They've put together an animation.
Oh, I won't press that because it'll. My fan's already on. I think you can hear it.
Yeah, but you're running your Mac.
Yeah, can you hear it kicking in?
No.
Anyway, whatever.
Oh no, it's Flash, of course. But yeah, it's worthwhile taking a look as
okay,
well.
Okay, so again, not it'll probably be gone by the time that this gets out there. But you know, whoop de doo.
No, but that's why I've put the YouTube link rather than today's Google Doodle link. Aha,
You've thought of everything.
Yeah, yeah. But the one thing that's nice as well is like the, just going back to Google TV, see having YouTube as a full screen, you know, via Plex, or you know, if you get a plugin that's good for, you know, something like Chrome, it gets rid of all the cruff, you know, around about it. If you can just get the video, superb. You know, there's so much content on there now.
Yeah, I do find though that the adverts in YouTube are getting more and more on my nerves. The ones that actually pop up
plugins
over all the videos is annoying. I guess better the devil.
There's extensions that disable all that.
Right, okay. Well, I might look into those then.
Waha.
Yes. Okay. Google have also announced that they're bringing back offline modes. Now, they used to have something called Google Gears, which effectively let your online applications, things like Google Mail, Calendar and things, run offline. They closed all that down, but now they're bringing back sort of standards compliant HTML5 versions. Now, Pigeon steps at the moment. They've got an offline version for Google Mail, which you can get from the App Store. Effectively, it lets you move around your emails when you're offline. Lets you compose a new email, but obviously not send. Lets you do everything, and then next time you attach to the internet, it all kind of catches up with itself. Google Calendar lets you view calendars. It doesn't let you add appointments, doesn't let you do anything else. And Google Docs, again, lets you view Google Docs. You can't edit them while you're in offline mode. And it's all, at the moment, it's not in a one sort of encapsulating app, but it's like I say, pigeon steps. It's starting on down the line of where they kind of need to go to make this a viable product. Enough said.
I have nothing else to add.
Okay.
It's good to see they've brought it back, because it was something that I think people used to rely on quite a bit. You know, if you've moved over to Google Apps for your domain and were relying on that offline access to, you know, sort your mail on the plane, to lose that was a vocal but small element that found it quite.
They can't go into big business where they want to be, up until they've got something sorted where they're not entirely reliant on a connection.
Yes.
You've obviously seen the new look Google Docs online. Again, step forward, yes. Impressive, good looking.
I like it. I like it. I really do. It's slightly streamlined. Doesn't make it too officey feeling.
No,
I think they've got a really nice looking feel to it all.
Yeah, it's simple without being. You know, you can still understand everything. It looks like just about like an app. You know, as in a standard desktop thing. So impressive stuff anyway. So you can more
tied in with the kind of what we saw, remember when Google Plus came out and it was a bit of a redesign and Gmail changed and finally there's a kind of unification to their suite.
You can see the kind of direction they want to take it, and you can see how in the future they can, different versions can, you know, upgrades can happen. I don't know. It's nice to see it. You know, the promise of the cloud coming to the fore. They've also updated Plus Ones, but what have they done? I haven't really looked at the Plus Ones.
Previously, you could click on a Plus One somewhere, and if you've enabled it in your profile, it would appear in your profile, but nobody looks at anybody's profile, really. So finally, you can, if I plused one Digital Outbox's website, I now get an option to share that on Google Plus, and I can share it with certain circles. You know, so you can send a link out to work colleagues, if you could send a link out to, you know, family and friends very easily now. So it's actually quite a nice update, and it always feels like finally, because in day one it came out, I couldn't believe that there was a Plus One button that didn't work with Google Plus.
It seemed like they put it out there because they felt like they needed a Facebook like button. Now, the other thing is, it will be used as a signal in generic search results as well.
You can see
they said how it would be one of 200 signals.
Yes, and I can see now if somebody has plus one'd. I think you can see if you've plus one'd a site, I can see you've plus one'd it, almost like a recommendation when I'm on Google.
I think they're going to use it as a signal, why? Because they always said they were going to help it, you know, with your friend. You know, you're going to be able to see what your friends are plus one, but they are now generally using it as one of their signals for saying what's a good site or not.
I really have to get a plus one button on our website. Think of all those clicks that we're missing
we
right
might
now.
Get three, you, me, someone else.
Eddie.
A full spring clean. So we've been having a bit of a clean out. Well, we haven't.
Google has.
Yeah. They're scattergun. They're having a bit of a sweep down of all the
this is since Herr Schmidt. I'm never not going to call him Herr Schmidt. This is since he's moved on, and Larry Page came in, he says he wanted to focus on what's important to the company. So they've actually, and they've closed off a whole, you know, suite of tools over the last, I guess, couple of months.
Did you know Wave is still going? You can still get to Wave. I didn't realize it.
They bought Slide as a company for 200 million just about a year ago. And 2 weeks ago, Slide had launched, I think, Pool Party and Photovine, two products on the iPhone. And 3 days later, they were closed.
Yeah, people were rated Photovine. So, I think I can't remember what it was all about, but it seemed to get
Photovine. It was another kind of Instapaper slash what's other? You know how there's Empath, these kind of photo tools where you could share with friends. Mm. It's another one of those, and you could create a vine of content. So here's work related photos, and other people could join it. And people were actually saying it was really good. And 3 days later, it was closed. So obviously, you know, a very late decision, and you know, very little knowledge about it in the company. But Slide were getting run as a almost like a subdivision, you know, so we're running on their own, and obviously somebody further up said enough's enough, stop. Similarly, there's 10 products announced on Friday, and it was Google's post themselves that said it's a fall spring clean. So a couple that kind of stood out. Aardvark, I didn't really know too much about, but it's all about social search. And it was a company they'd bought as a startup they'd acquired, but it didn't go anywhere. Desktop. And I've still got Google Desktop running at work. It's still my best search engine. You know, so that's something that's no longer going to be developed for from September 14th. FastFlip we talked about before. It was a easier way of kind of presenting web content. Maps API for Flash, which some people saw as a bit of a kind of kick for Flash, but I don't think anybody's surprised that they're going
to
move away.
To be honest, I think even Adobe have pretty much said we're not doing Flash anymore. You know, they're all about HTML5, which is the right direction for them.
Yeah, and there was a couple. I guess other couple was Notebook. So this was a kind of app they put together for clipping URLs and kind of notes. I think things like Evernote have kind of killed that off. As Evernote's kind of emerged as the almost it's not the default. The eBay, there's a few others that do the same. Yeah. You know, Evernote's really coming on strong again.
Evernote did the right thing. They are everywhere, and that's the most important thing.
Yep. And SideWiki. I remember talking about
you
that.
You did, I can't remember what it was, though, because I never used it.
Episode 13.
Was it that long ago?
No, I've no idea when it was. But SideWiki was all about almost trying to collaborate on web content, and it poo-pooed. So it's no great surprise.
Oh, that was reviews and things in the sidebar, wasn't it? Was it? You could see what your friends and people had said about a store. Or let's say a restaurant or whatever in the site, and restaurants weren't particularly happy about it.
No.
Yeah, I remember.
I think a lot of sites weren't particularly happy about it, because you could start to comment on BBC or Fox News, etc. You know, so there was almost
shock horror.
But it never took off.
All right, and yeah, that's no one ever used it anyway, so it's fine.
No. But I think good to see some focus. You know, so let's see Gmail and documents and all the stuff that people are using day to day. You know, let's get them improved and let's focus on. I mean, Google Plus, to me, has been one of the best products launched this year. Yeah. I'm loving Google Plus.
Absolutely. I don't think this will change. I don't think it will stop Google innovating. I just think it is the natural step of, we've done all this innovating. Now we've got to focus on what's actually worked. And I think that's fair enough. And we'll see the cycle go again, I'm sure, where they think they're juggling too many balls. And so let's get rid of the ones that aren't where we want to go.
I still see Buzz disappearing by Christmas.
I can't believe it's still around, basically.
Yeah. You know, I'm what's surprised point, it's basically? Not in that list. That,
you know, what's the point of having two things that trying to do the same kind of thing and one failed, one hasn't? Right, so the...
Chrome OS, Android?
Yeah, anyway. People are talking about that being taken away. But they've not really put that to... They haven't matured it enough to know. You know, that's part of their... Part of this thing of having offline apps, you know, means that even a... You know, well, I don't know. We'll see.
I would just go all Android. That's one.
Crowdsourced data. BBC have commissioned a report basically to look into mobile data coverage and how we're supposed to have 90% coverage, but in reality, it doesn't work like that. Now, I put this story in not because, you know, I was shocked about the fact that we haven't got 90% coverage. We all know that. But it's more that they did it via crowdsourcing, and I thought it was a really innovative way of getting that data back in. So they basically got a sample of data from people willing to put, I don't know, some sort of tracking on their phone, and off they went, and they report, you know, they put the reports out there, and I think we might see more of this, basically. So that's that there.
And it was really well done, actually.
Yeah.
And I know, I mean, Guardian have done something similar before when they've had the big WikiLeaks type things. You know, instead of them getting a team of 10 or 20 journalists and trying to get through, you know, thousands of documents, put them all out there, give people the tools to do it, and let people, you know, so crowdsource that hunt for information.
Yep.
Very clever.
So, yep, I think we'll see more of that. It's good stuff. Now, I think it probably was at the end of our last podcast when we were talking about how HP were going out of the computer business. I say that loosely. I mean, in the hardware kind of business. And they'd obviously only had their new touchpad on the market for, I think it was 30 odd days, just over 30 days.
48.
So in total, by the end of all the shenanigans that transpired, again, I imagine that most people who are listening to the podcast would have heard about something along these lines by now. But effectively, the touchpad was selling for around $399 or just over. And it hadn't shifted. They'd sold very few of them, so they pretty much said, right, we're getting rid of WebOS, and we are going to sell all these touchpads at, I think it ended up being, was it $99? So 89 quid over in the UK. And it caused an absolute mad rush. and as we said earlier on, actually the touchpad is now the second most popular pad. And it's basically because they sold it at this ridiculously loss leading price. But that led them to think, oh, hang on a second, have we actually got a product here that we want to keep? So that they've turned into this company that doesn't really know what they want to do at the moment. Or rather, they probably do, but they're not very good at communicating what they want to do.
No, I don't think they do. I think they're all over the place.
I mean, they
since this has happened, there's an executive who was traveling in Australia says, you know, we never quite said we would kill
it. Yes, now he's the thing is, he's the guy that probably would be putting, if they do spin off the company, he's the guy that's probably going to be leading that spin off company. So he's got a vested interest in trying to make sure that they don't poo poo his new company too much.
Robert, they made a move today. They've actually taken the WebOS team out of the PC division, which they were placed in, and brought it into the kind of software side of things at HP.
Anyway, they're gonna support WebOS for 1 year, I think they've said, haven't they? But I imagine they'll license it off or do something with it. They won't just kill it entirely now.
And I was quite keen to buy one. See, when it was £89, I was like, I would have that just to put in my shelf.
We've said it before. It's a magic price point, and the problem is that it's a price point that's untenable. I mean, for anyone, I mean, we'll probably come onto the Amazon. I think we're going to come onto the Amazon one soon. They are going to bring out a tablet, and maybe they're big enough and have enough support to subsidize the cost of the actual tablet with products and services. But I don't think HP were ever in that business of the products and services. They wanted to sell hardware. With WebOS as well. Anyway, they're a company that's getting a lot of panning and slating at the moment, because I think one of their press releases came out saying, well, the latest hypothesis is, and any press release that says hypothesis in it is probably not really what your shareholders want to hear, I think.
I've looked into my crystal ball.
Yes.
And it told me.
So HP, one of those big guys. I have no doubt that they will find their way forward. They've got enough resource, might, and cleverness, I'm sure, to work their way through it. But they're not doing a good job, it doesn't seem.
No, and I think it's clear to everybody they want out of hardware and they want to move into software. And if you look at the CEO they brought in a year ago, I think he came, was it from SAP he came from? He came from one of the big kind of software vendors. You know, so maybe it's been kind of written in the tea leaves for a long time. You know, he's come in and he sees that company going in a different direction.
Margins on computer hardware are tiny. So even though HP were the biggest,
unless you're Apple, they're the only ones that seem to be able to turn that. You know, it seems a high price, but we're buying it at such a low volume. That we're making oodles of money, and people still think they're getting a good bargain. I mean, people still think iPad 2 is cheap.
I do think iPad 2 is cheap. I think they did an incredible job of putting an amazing bit of hardware together for a price. I'm saying this because I've now bought one. So, confession, yeah, confessions out there.
So you're the third person in 2 days.
Yeah,
my mate from Scunthorpe turned up yesterday and says, oh, can I have a look at your iPad? Is this the cover I should buy? And I went, well, you just bought an iPad. He went, yeah, an iPad 2? Yeah. And I was like, since when am I the Luddite? Going to work on Friday, somebody's bought an iPad. Going to work today, somebody else bought an iPad. And it's just like, wow.
Yeah, there's some sort of tipping point.
Why now? Why right now? That's what I don't understand. It's been out for like 4 months. And it just seems to be there's a... It's almost like people are getting into the, summer's over, winter's coming up.
Yeah, I think you...
Time for a toy.
I have no explanation other than, almost a punt I did on it, and I do love it. I think it's great. So we're going to see an Amazon Kindle tablet. Now last I heard this was all still rumors because we didn't know anything, but I think over the last few days we've had more strong reports, and also hands-on people are saying.
Yes, so this is MG Siegler, who is one of the journalists at TechCrunch, and is the only kind of journalist I would read and kind of semi-trust, not just because he loves Apple, but he tends to not get too sensationalist, whereas a lot of the TechCrunch guys like to dish dirt and basically be cocks. He's The difference with this story is a lot of people have been predicting it, you know, almost for the last year. And I think you could see it, you know, the Kindle's come out, you look at all the kind of cloud services they've got, that makes it's natural. You know, even when they launch an Android app store.
Amazon are the only ones that have got everything that Apple have got. You know, they've got music, they've got, you know, hardware, software, and the infrastructure to put it all together as well. You know, they've got everything they need, and they do it cheaper than Apple does it.
And they've got your credit card linked to an account.
Yes.
You know, so Apple have made their big claims before about how many hundreds of millions of people they've got with an Apple ID that has, you know, linked to a credit card. And Amazon, and I guess, you know, people like probably Sony and Microsoft have got equivalents through the, you know, Xbox Live and the PS3 stores. But the difference with MG Siegel's story is he actually says he's had hands-on time, but he couldn't take photos. And his report's very interesting. It's a 7-inch touchscreen. It's a backlit LCD, so it's not going to be e-ink. It's not colour e-ink. It's an actual proper LCD screen. Design similar to RIM's BlackBerry Playbook. But it is Android underneath, but with a custom front end on it. So it's purely an Amazon front end. He described it as a kind of cover flow set of images to view your content. And each of the different cover flows, each of the different icons was taking you almost to like a different Amazon store. You know, so you had the App Store, you had instant video for movies and television, you had your music player for cloud-based music and Kindle for ebooks. And you can, you know, you rhyme off, as you said, you rhyme off those services. Amazon have got them all.
And I think it's, and once a tablet has got web, email, music and media and, you know, videos, it's got everything that 90% of the time you want to use it for. And I think it's an interesting thing that they seem to be packaging it up, or from what this says, they seem to be packaging it up as a, it's not like a tablet that we're kind of used to. It is a dedicated Amazon offering. You know, there, I imagine that this Android won't look like Android as we know it, you know, at all. And we'll just, you can sell it at a loss, therefore, because you know that people are going to be shoehorned into using Amazon services, and, you know, that's where they're going to make their money.
Yep. And the hardware actually sounded quite, in some ways, quite low specs. We're all now used to, you know, like dual core chips, etc. But the way he was talking about, he believes it's a single core chip. He believes it only has 6 gig of internal storage, but it will have an SD slot, you know, so you could easily, quite cheaply add in, you know, a lot of storage. Initial version might be Wi-Fi only.
All this is pointing to a
possible 3G.
They've gone for a low-cost device, like a Kindle. Again, you know, the Kindle, it's almost throwaway now. I say that flippantly, but it's at a price point that it's easy to go and buy, and you don't worry about putting it in your bag and things like that.
The only slight niggle, it took them 3 versions to get there. I mean, yes. The first version of the Kindle wasn't a throwaway product. It was quite expensive for what it was, and design-wise, it looked horrid.
But perhaps now they've realised that there is a market they can make back on. A bit like, you know, consoles lose all money on that when they first release. There's a market for them to make their money back that's bigger than the cost of the hardware in the first place. So maybe they're going to punt on it a bit heavier. But it all sounds like the specs are for a device that doesn't do, you know, bespoke apps and custom big games and things like that. It's meant to consume media and the internet, and do it at a low price.
Would you be interested in a 7-inch tablet?
I have never used a 7-inch tablet to know. I've only just started using a 10-inch one.
But it really is, you know, if I take my humongously giant iPad and I put the iPhone there, it is in that middle size.
People say the thing is, I guess I'm quite liking the fact that I've got extra space compared to a phone, and that's what I quite like about the pad at the moment.
They've talked about price as well, and I've been talking around about $250, which is really keen compared to the, I think, is the iPad 500 starting price in America?
So that's $399 over here. So that looks like, if it was really 250, it'd be, what would it be, 200 odd quid, which is, again, maybe it'd be interesting to see anyway.
Yeah, $499 for the iPad 2.
It won't be long. It won't be long until we find out. Internet Explorer 8. I keep doing that. Did that last time. This is Windows 8 Explorer. They're going to whack the ribbon on it.
Deja vu.
Yeah. They're going to whack the ribbon on it.
Yeah, and this is a... I just put this in to be a bitch, basically. It's a dickish move that I've made.
Trademark digital outbox.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a blog post all about improvements in Windows Explorer. They've been talking up Windows 8. There's been lots of leaked videos and images coming out about it. There's a lot of focus on that kind of touch JavaScript-driven front end that they're kind of putting on Windows 8. But this was more looking at, like, how can we improve Explorer? And it was all this, here's a history of it, and here's the research, and here's what we've been doing. And then it was the most hideous UI ever. It looked truly awful.
I'm still not a fan of the ribbon in Office now, because it's still alien to me and doesn't work.
Somebody summed this up perfectly. You know the website The Onion, and they post news related stories that are, once you start reading it, you know it's not true, but in a slightly alternate universe, they could be. Somebody said this was a perfect Onion post, and they thought it was The Onion. And then they had to double check that it was actually a Microsoft blog post. And I think that summed it up perfectly. It looked spoof-like, because here's all this great research, but we've thrown that away and we've created this ribbon on the Explorer. And they would even talk about things like Windows 7, 27 files, and the same screen size, 29 in Windows 8.
Woo.
And it was just like, yeah, but there's this massive bar that you had at the bottom of Windows 7's Explorer, and you've lost that, so you should be able to see another 5 or 6 files, but no, you've put this massive bar with functionality at the top, which nobody's going to use.
And how much on Windows do you end up using the Explorer anyway? Less so nowadays. I do it all by searching the start bar. Anyway, by and by.
I just thought it's highlighting a real change in direction. I mean, if you look at Line, and I've just started crafting my Line post. I know it's been out for ages, but I feel I owe it to myself. Nobody else will read it. But I've got a little itch now just about the things I like, and quite a lot of things I dislike about Line. But one of the things that's quite clear is just how, you know, in Macs, it's all about simplicity and streamlining. And I thought Windows was taking steps in that direction, and in certain aspects they are, but then you see this and you think, oh, could be.
Yeah, well, you got to give them credit as far as they did a good job with Windows 7, and maybe they know better than we do. Maybe they do.
And I think part of the reason I've added this in is I actually had a Windows tablet at my workplace on Thursday or Friday last week.
Almost live blogging your...
Oh, it was horrendous. I mean,
your experience.
It is the worst piece of tat that I've had the misfortune to lay my hands on in years. And out the box, now you've just bought an iPad too. It's out the box. You open it up, you turn it on, because it's got some juice in it.
It was almost fully charged.
Yep, and you can, and straight away you're there, and it's fast, and you're like, you're loving it, and you're. I take this out the box, and there's no juice, so I plug it in, and I switch it on, and after 3 reboots, after 50 minutes of it configuring and setting up Windows, offering me to partition the drive, telling me that I can only pick the language once. If I get it wrong, that's me, because I can't change it. And then sitting at this Fujitsu screen, and we actually all thought it had died, but it was doing something. All the other time it told you it was doing something, and this just kind of rotating screen, finally I got in and enjoyed the loveliness.
Windows 7 built for a desktop on the iPad.
The best bit was the amount of buttons on it. I mean, this has more buttons than the iPhone and the iPad and any Android device that I've ever had to miss, no, the great luxury of touching, all put together. There's about, I don't know, 20 buttons on this thing. And the best bit was where I rotated it, and it didn't rotate. And I was like, oh, that's rubbish. Oh, that must be what this rotate button does. So I pressed the button, and sure enough, it rotates around. You press it again, and it rotates again, but not back to where you want to. So you need to press it 4 times to get it back to, and it's just...
It would have been easy if you just turned the device right.
Oh,
yes, so that's what you get when you build the hardware and then figure out how to do the software on top of it.
That's why there's not many Windows 7 tablets out there.
Indeed. Okay, so that's the end of our news stories, but let's have a go at picks. And I am going to do a pick this week, because I very rarely do. And this one's not really exactly a sort of tech pick, but it's a website called academicearth.org. And effectively, it is online university courses delivered up via the media of video. And they're from the major US universities. So you've got things like Princeton, Yale, and Harvard, MIT, and they deliver up all, there's a whole ton of different courses covering all their different subjects. And it's just like being a student at those universities. You get to see their universities, the courses. You can subscribe to them via podcast, so you can just whack them into iTunes and it'll download all the videos ready for you to watch and view as you want. And what sparked me was that there's some computer science courses and things like that that, you know, for a geeky person, it's great to sort of go and have a look at what the students are taught nowadays, basically. And I just thought, again, another, it's all done free through the Creative Commons license. And it's not just the big US universities. Other universities are free to sign up and do a similar thing. But obviously they advertise the big ones as their kind of their leading lights. But yeah, an impressive website. And that's academicearth.org.
I must take a look. I hadn't heard of it until... Yeah. Until Friday, and last, then again today.
When we last did this very podcast.
Yeah. My pick is an odd one, because it's a service, and it's not a service you can really sign up to. So it's called tweetmarker.net. And basically, it's a service that Twitter applications can sign up for. And once you've enabled it against your account, it will sync your position in the Twitter timeline. So I can move from desktop to my iPhone, and it remembers where
Hallelujah. I was thinking this very thing the other day, how blooming annoying it is going between two different places and having to scroll up through all the things you've just read. So,
and I will admit, it's a first world problem. See, in the grand scheme of things, it's not I'm really right.
That's almost what that term was built for, these kind of little problems. But nevertheless, it's one of those things where as soon as someone says, I've made this service, you think, wow, what a good idea. I wish I'd thought of that. The main Twitter client doesn't use it, though, and the website doesn't use it.
No, and I guess this was it's a developer called Manton Rees, who has done lots of Mac development in the past, and he very recently did an iPad Twitter client, which was a very different Twitter client, and it allowed you to almost collate tweets around an event and then store them for future reference, you know, so around the riots or around a conference, around something like Egypt, it let you collate them together, pull together from different hashtag and users, and then archive them away. So a very different service. And he's had, a limited success on it, maybe not as successful as he's hoped. But one of the kind of things that spun off from it is TweetMarker. So at the moment, Twitterific on all iOS devices and on the Mac, Tweetbot on the iPhone, and Tweetings on iMac, iPhone, I think iPad as well, are the only ones to support it. So it's almost very kind of Mac-y right now. And I think that's more probably because I'm from his background. I think obviously as more developers sign up for it, it will start to spread. I'd love to see Twitter just saying, can we just buy this?
I would like to see them say, can we just buy this? But what I actually see them doing is go, oh, that's a good idea. Like they do everything else. Let's just whack it in as part of our API. And actually, overall, that would be better. It won't be better for this guy unless he's put a patent on it. But basically, I think that is what's going to happen, that Twitter will just, because it can't be that complicated to have a value somewhere saying this user's got up to this ID or whatever. I say that like it's, easy, but actually, I bet it's not. Nevertheless, this guy's done it, so I am sure we'll see them do that, because that's what their model is, isn't it? You know, wait for someone to innovate and then let's just take the good idea.
It just makes more sense. I don't follow like thousands of people. I'm up at, I think, about a couple of hundred, and even that, I find about as much as I can take. It gets too much, and every so often I'll go on a little cull and remove the either separate people are being too noisy or people, it's not relevant to what I want to know. It's not nothing bad. I mean, people do take it seriously, like, oh, well, he unfollowed me, I will unfollow him, and it's like, well, whatever.
There's absolutely no way though that this guy can support the whole of the tweet network. I mean, that thing cripples the biggest infrastructures going, especially when Beyonce says she's pregnant.
Yes, how very...
She's got the record,
stubborn.
Yeah?
Yes.
What was it?
Most tweets per second.
I can't remember how many... I can't remember.
I think it was 8,800.
Per second. Which beat the US Women's World Cup final or something like that. I can't remember. Which was the previous record.
Yes, there we go. Beyonce's baby elevation breaks tweet record. 8,868 tweets per second.
Pretty good memory there. Yeah, well,
more mentions per second in the Women's World Cup, Japan's New Year, or Osama bin Laden's death.
There you go. Is that important?
Fantastic.
Tweet is so yesterday's news. So mainstream now. So that's the end of the podcast. If you want to find out more about us, you can do at digitaloutbox.com, and you can email us info@digitaloutbox.com. You'll find us on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. If you want to find out more about me, I occasionally tweet at CheesyUK. Ian, where can we find you?
I am my blog is ind.net, where eventually sometime in the next month I'll put up my thoughts online, up to date on the pulse as well.
We are the news pulse of tech stuff.
Well, you don't just want to put up knee-jerk reactions. You don't want to
actually
just,
I think,
know.
Our industry suffers more from knee-jerk reactions than anyone else, so we are the people to come to if you're looking a few months down the line.
Exactly. So yeah, Samsung, send us one of your tablets and we'll give you a considered view after a year of use.
It's like long-term car reviews, right? Someone's got to do them.
That's going to be my pitch. Samsung, we're not into this two-week knee-jerk stuff. It's all about the long-term, baby.
Absolutely.
Tweets are on Sweeper. Sweeper is my name, which you'll never find, but hey, give it a try.
How's that long-term WebOS, sir, review going on?
It's not. Funnily enough.
Anyway, so thanks for listening, and we'll talk at you next time. See you later.
Ta-da. I quite like that talk at you.
I haven't crashed.
So, I exactly. What a difference.
I have overheated this Mac.
Mac 1.
I it's feeling pretty
Windows
warm.
Zero.
I think I better save this before it explodes. Oh.
Yes. Oh.
Should we just ignore that?
I'll just cut that bit out.
Okay, so that's the end of the podcast. If you want to find out, sorry. Right, do that bit again. So that's the end of the podcast. If you want to find... Right, I am going to do this.